I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
A Rayo Original Podcast.
I just burst into tears. I was not ready. I hadn't slept. I'd had 11 meetings back to back. That was like the first time in my journey that I realised, like, oh, I'm not actually invincible. And I feel like everyone gets these moments, right? But it's really important to maintain momentum. All of a sudden, it was the right time to do it. And I remember sitting there, like, opposite my mum and dad, like, on my iPad, like, what is going on here? It goes back to just practice makes perfect.
Yeah.
And just putting yourself in these scary situations that don't feel natural at first, but 100%, like, walk in the park, loads of the things that I was worried about three years ago. When I think back to the last 5 years, the amount of times I've been knocked down and got back up again, like, you just have to keep getting back up again.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Rise with Roxy. Today's guest is a woman who turned a university project into a global fashion brand without investors, without a safety net, and without following the rules of fast fashion. Amy Smale is the founder of Odd Muse, a brand redefining modern luxury for young women through timeless investment pieces. And she started it all at just 21 years old with the belief that fashion could be slower, better, and more intentional. Since then, Odd Muse has grown into a multi-million pound business with stores in London and New York, a fiercely loyal customer base, and collections that sell out again and again. But this episode isn't just about success. It's about the risks that didn't pay off, the confidence she had to grow into, the mistakes that she was maybe too embarrassed to talk about, and the practical lessons that she's learned building a brand. I am so excited for this conversation. So let's rise with Amy. Amy, I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you
I'm
so
very
much.
I'm excited to be here.
I have honestly been so inspired by you. I love watching your journey. And I think this is going to be really motivating for so many people. So I want you to paint a picture for somebody that doesn't know Odd Muse, perhaps doesn't know the brand, hasn't heard your story. And I want you to paint a picture by describing your first week of Odd Muse.
Wow.
And I want you to compare it to your best week.
Wow. Okay, so my first week at Odd Muse, I'm in a 400 square foot self-storage unit that my mum had so much anxiety that I'd gone and spent £150 a month on this self-storage unit. But I was like, this is a business. I need some sort of ongoing cost here. So I rented myself a little storage unit. I was packing my own orders. I was posting stories and I was maybe selling like 10, 20 blazers a day. And for someone who just started, that was like, I couldn't believe my luck.
Mm.
And I mean, my best week at Odd Muse is opening a townhouse on New Bond Street. So there's a lot that's happened in the last 5 years, but it's nice to think about it that way, actually. Sometimes I don't look back enough.
Mm. And is that how long it was, 5 years ago?
5 years ago, I started, yeah.
My gosh, that is a fast journey.
Mm.
And I went into the Bond Street store and it is just beautiful. And it is on the same street as, you know, Cartier and Chanel and Dior.
But I think that's one of the reasons why I chose that street, because typically my customer doesn't get to shop down that street. And I think Odd Muse, I always want the younger consumer to experience something that luxury fashion has never invited them into. So a lot of what we do has that in mind. Like, we're positioning ourselves next to these brands, and not because we want to be them, but because we want our customers to have that luxury experience.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah.
I'd never considered that, but that is actually so lovely. And it really has that kind of like customer front of mind.
Yeah.
What an amazing approach. And that's also just so smart, which I have learned you are. so we're going to go into everything. Okay, so you grew up in Essex.
Yep.
And before fashion, you were hustling, making vinyl diaries and creating
logos.
Yeah,
I was working at ASOS. I knew that wage wasn't going to cut it. So I was like making logos. I was building brochures.
What do you mean by making logos? Like designing them?
Designing business logos. Making I didn't care for it to be glamorous. I was making brochures for like local electrical companies, like anything that kind of like was helping me get a bit of a wage up to start Oddmuse.
Oh, so you always knew you wanted to have a fashion brand?
Well, it was kind of something that I was practicing on my commute in, just on my iPad. I'd design dresses. I'd think of like a hypothetical brand name if I ever wanted a brand. And it got to a point over COVID, over lockdown, where I was so unhappy at ASOS. I had the money and I had the idea. Mm. I'd even started like sampling versions of the blazer just for fun.
Right.
So it kind of just felt like all of a sudden it was the right time to do it.
How did you come up with the name? And did you come up with the name before you designed the blazer or after?
Oddmuse was the very last thing. Everything else was, the mission was slow luxury fashion. At the time I was around 19 years old when I started planning Oddmuse and I'd just come out of university. And literally the only brand selling to me was like Pretty Little Thing and Boohoo. And I thought it was quite small-minded of the industry to just assume that a young woman wants to shop fast fashion. And at ASOS, I was on the premium luxury department. So I was working with a lot of Australian brands and I feel like they do mid-luxury really well.
Yeah, they really do.
So I was really inspired by those brands and bringing that kind of message and mission to the UK. So that's where it kind of started.
And then you say you started just like sampling your designs. Like, how do you even go about that?
Well, obviously I was working in the fashion industry and I found it so interesting just how you can get clothes onto site, like the process, margins, buying the stock, fabrics, everything fascinated me. So it kind of started as a hobby. Like Oddmuse was my hobby that I really never knew would go anywhere. And then I basically was really happy on that department. I got moved to beauty over lockdown and beauty buying is totally different. So I was going from like going to like really nice appointments and doing a whole collection every fashion week to just ordering like 20,000 Pixie Glow tonics on repeat.
Right.
And I just lost all like satisfaction. But I feel like that kind of led me to just do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I had nothing to lose at that point.
It was the like redirection that like started everything.
Yeah.
So you start your first product is a blazer, right?
Yeah.
So how quickly from like designing it do you decide, right, I'm going to get this to site. How many did you order? How much money did you actually have saved at this point
so
as well?
So I originally started Oddmuse with £12,000 and pretty much 80% of that cost was spent on stock. There wasn't much budget for marketing or anything else. That's why a lot of my marketing strategy at the beginning was just like me. And I started with, I remember I'd done a like 6-piece collection, but everyone remembers us for the blazer. So I always tell other founders, like, just start with one product because you'd rather be known for one product than like 6 different ones. And you had to order 50 of everything. But for some reason, I just had a really strong feeling about the blazer. So I ordered 100 of them.
Right.
And lo and behold, the 100 sold out really quickly. I ended up doing this manual pre-order system that logistically was a nightmare, but we managed to sell like 700 units before I even kind of paid my suppliers. Like we'd done this pre-order model because I did not have the cash injection to order to this demand I had. So I had to do
something. But where is this demand coming from? Because you're like 19. Yeah. Did you have a big social media following at the time?
No, not at all. So by this time, I'm like 22 years old. Everything's launched. And we actually got picked up really quickly by Lorna Lux. And she had organically bought the blazer and just randomly posted on her story, like, I've just discovered this new brand. Like, they're amazing. And this blazer's coming tomorrow. And literally, like, it just went wild. And I knew how short of attention span consumers have now. Mm-hmm. So I just really kind of, like, fed into that. And not only did people love the product, everyone loved the story. Like, they'd look into the brand that Lorna just posted about. And I had, like, 500 followers. I was in this self-storage unit. Like, I've just quit my job. Like, follow along. And I feel like the story mixed with a genuine good product just kind of gave me the right moment at the right time. And I feel like everyone gets these moments, right? But it's really important to maintain momentum. And for the last 5 years since Lorna posted about my blazer, I have just not stopped doing it something every year to make people go like, wow. So Lorna was our first wow moment. Then we did Fashion Week. Then we opened the store. So I'm constantly like pushing for that next wow moment. And I think that's important because everyone kind of has their like huge moment with a celebrity, but they don't know what to do with it. And it's just important to know that you can't live off that moment forever.
How did you maintain the momentum from Lorna? And also, I think it's like wild to hear that one influencer can actually have that much impact on a brand and a business.
I think where it was just totally organic. Like I hadn't paid. I remember I was messaging her so much because I just am a big fan of hers. I love how organic her content is. So I think it was just like a really organic moment mixed with like that great product. But in terms of how I kept that momentum, I remember I didn't have any knowledge of like CRM or marketing or anything like that.
And what's CRM for someone listening?
Well, it's just like data and like customers and like what you can do with that kind of data. So I remember putting like a response box on my story, like, if you want this blazer, drop your email here.
Yeah.
And we got like 1,000 emails. I was manually put it all through. And then I kind of just took the chance to say to my suppliers, look, I can't pay you for this order, but I need 700 jackets. And when you're done production, I promise I'll have the money. So yeah. I didn't have any money to give them a deposit. I said, once you finish production in 4 weeks, I promise you I'll sell them all.
Right.
So I took a risk there, but I put the pre-order live and literally that day we took around £60,000. And I remember sitting there like opposite my mum and dad, like on my iPad, like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
But then I was able to pay my suppliers like straight away. And that kind of is the reason why we've been able to scale to what we are today without an outside investment. Because for a long time, we don't do it anymore, but for a long time, majority of the SKUs on our site were being sold before the product was finished. So wow, through so a pre-order model.
How long did you have a pre-order model for?
We've reduced it throughout the years. So like in 2024, I'd say like 50% of our SKUs on site were on pre-order. Now only like 7%.
Right.
But it led to our launches. Like when we're now launching a collection, everyone rushes because they don't want to be put on pre-order. So it's been like, it's been like the most accidental but best thing for the brand ever.
Would you recommend people to try this pre-order model?
I mean, I would only if demand is there. I think where brands go wrong is like launching on pre-order. And it's like, you have to see that it's sold out and in demand to actually expect someone to wait 4 weeks to get it.
Yeah.
So for me, the blazer had gone out to all these customers. Lorna was wearing it in Paris. And if you wanted one, you had to wait 4 weeks now. It wasn't just this new brand, new product that no one knew about. So I think it's important to know how and when to trigger it.
It's so funny, that kind of like psychology of people where they really need to know that like it's wanted by other people and that they can't have it anymore.
Yeah.
And then they want it.
Yeah.
Like, has that surprised you at all?
Yeah. I mean, it was not a strategy when I was like planning it on the way to ASOS at all. Like, we fell into this strategy, but I know how short a customer's attention span is. So for me, it was either I sell 700 people, 700 blazers right now, and they have to wait 4 weeks. Or I wait for them to come in, I sell them then, and everyone will be gone. So that's how I kind of saw it.
Yeah, yeah. That's so, so true. So what happens kind of in the next year, let's say, from this moment? Are you still in your self-storage at this point?
Yeah, I ended up expanding to have like the two of the biggest units there. And then we moved to an office. And it's kind of just gradually the logistics and operational side of Odd Muse, thank God, has become like so much smoother. Like we have an amazing 3PL now and we have an ops team, but it was really like manual for a few years. Like
a few years?
Yeah.
Like what? Really, talk me through it.
Like packing orders in-house for like years and years. Like I think we'd done like 5 million in-house, like packing the orders in-house in up until like 2023.
And like describe this to someone listening. Like what is someone literally, just describe this. So describe the scenario when you walk into the Odd Muse office.
So we used to have this tiny office built inside our warehouse and it was just like an insane place. Like we'd have people in marketing packing orders and it would be just this insane place. And it got to a point where we was like, we actually need to separate the headquarters and outsource to a 3PL that's actually going to be better at us and faster than us.
And explain what a 3PL is for someone.
A third party logistics. So that's like how I would advise anyone, if you're doing product, get a 3PL from the beginning, have them ship your orders, because you can't be bummed down. Like I remember Black Friday 2023, like I'm supposed to be in my like business era and I'm packing orders till like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
It just, you need to separate it. And you can, if you start with that, you can factor that into your costs. So everything with Odd Muse, I just feel like I started it not thinking it was going to be this big. So I always thought that I'd be able to work for myself and just pack my own orders and stuff like that. It's much more than that now. But yeah. I kind of like continued with that false reality for a bit too long.
I mean, I cannot believe you guys were packing orders in-house at that point.
Yeah.
That seems wild to me.
It's all just, and this is one of the reasons why I put such an importance on founder content, because the only reason I continued, I feel, running it so poorly behind the scenes was because I just didn't know anything.
Mm.
Like, no one was sharing tips and like who you should, like, saying about 3PLs. What are 3PLs?
Yeah.
I know now because I had to find it out myself.
So
that's one of the reasons why I went into founder content, because I was like, this is so hard and no one's talking about it. Everyone's making it look easy and it's not.
Yeah.
Even the finest of details is so difficult.
Mm. Was there ever a moment where, like, I think because when you have this like crazy success, it's quite like, I don't know, it's quite like addictive. There's this like real high to it mixed with this like real stress and hustle. But quite often you can feel like you're constantly chasing more, more, more. You're like, shit, mm-hmm. I need to keep this up. And that can in itself can feel like, oh my God, like I'm on this runaway train now.
Yeah.
Did it ever kind of feel like that to you?
A little bit. I remember we'd have these huge launches, but our daily sales wasn't like very good.
So explain what that means to someone. So that on launch day, you're making loads of money.
So
and
on
then...
launch day, you could have a huge launch day and make like six figures. But in the day, like you're struggling to hit like four figures, five figures.
Right.
So I really wanted to move the business in 2024 to just less of an importance on our launches and more focusing on like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, like every single day mm-hmm. and like a daily pacing is what I call mm-hmm. it. And I think that's one of the best things I ever did for the business, because I just recognise that virality is like this dopamine hit. It's a short stint and I want to have a brand with longevity.
Mm-hmm.
We really started focusing on like what is a Monday, Tuesday business as usual week for us, rather than we can't wait for a result to launch in 2 months.
Right. What goes into the preparation of a launch? How is that different to the day-to-day?
So launch, we put a lot more marketing and there's a lot more pressure to get people to site on launch day. Whereas every single day we want people to just be like shopping for their capsule wardrobe. We want people to be discovering Odd Muse for the first time. Mm-hmm. We also want people to, outside of buying, be enjoying our content and just coming in store and stuff like that. So before we were just a launch-based business.
How much of your own personal like content do you think contributed to its success? Because I know you were your own model for years.
Yep.
And I mean, I remember seeing your content years ago and it was just kind of like flying. And
yeah.
It was very UGC before UGC, I think, was even a thing.
Yeah.
And it really resonated. What do you make of that?
Oh, it's like, I always say like my biggest USP in Odd Muse has been myself.
Mm.
Like I have been a performing monkey for that brand for 5 years. The strategy now is a little bit different just because I feel like I just can't commit to it the way I once used to. Like I always say, when I was going to Paris and doing all the campaigns, like I had a lot less on my shoulders.
Yeah.
Now I'm going into a campaign with like much bigger problems because it's a big business. So I don't feel like I can show up as much for the business in that way. I don't want to be a model, but I do still want to be a founder.
Yeah.
At the very beginning, it was amazing and it was so much fun. And I was just in my early 20s having the best time ever.
Yeah.
But now it's much different. Like that's when I had like five people on my team. I now have 60 people on my team.
Yeah. And you're how old? Do you want me to ask you?
28.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
I think, you know, I had a really interesting conversation with some founders at my fragrance launch, and Eva, who is the founder of 111 Skin, she said to me, I was like, God, it's been so stressful getting to launch and the production and all of that. And she said, these stresses are nothing.
Mm.
The bigger the company, the more stress, the more responsibility, it only gets harder.
Oh my God.
Have you found that?
Absolutely. There's things that would absolutely break my heart 3 years ago that I could like,
Yeah.
Like I remember when we opened our first store, I was chronically stressed. I was under so
Where
much
was
pressure.
Your first store?
We had opened like a huge pop-up in Covent Garden,
down
Slingsby Place. And I remember feeling so much pressure for that, not sleeping. Like I could open a store tomorrow.
Mm.
It's just, it goes back to just practice makes perfect.
Yeah.
And just putting yourself in these scary situations that don't feel natural at first, but 100% like walk in the park, loads of the things that I was worried about 3 years ago.
But now, like you said just now, like you have so much more on your shoulders now.
Yeah.
So the kind of like, in a way, the things that you used to find scary are now you're fine.
Yeah.
But does founding a bit, you know, owning a business and going through the to something which has so much growth, people assume, oh, it must be really easy once you have a business that's making this much money, or people assume it gets easier. But no. Is that the case?
I remember at the beginning, when I was building Odd Muse, I would be checking Shopify every day, and I was so stressed to just hit that number in sales. Listen, when money isn't so much as a problem, it alleviates a lot of stress. But with a big business and a lot of people and a lot of different time zones and a lot of different stores, it breeds their own problems. So I think at the beginning, you're almost putting like a destination on your happiness where you're like, oh, I just need to get through this and I'll be fine. But then you get to like your fifth year and you're just kind of like susceptible that there's going to be problems every single day.
And is that the case? Is that always something?
Yeah, I think you have to be a problem. I think you have to be a problem solver, and I think you have to be so resilient. Like when I think back to the last 5 years, the amount of times I've been knocked down and got back up again, like you just have to keep getting back up again. Mm. We've had collections not work. We've had real big problems, and you just have to keep getting back up again.
What do you think is one of the most expensive mistakes you've ever made?
Oh, signing myself up for a store in Dubai that I never saw and like lost like the whole deposit on.
What happened?
They basically kind of like rang me and was like, this is the best opportunity. You can't miss out on this. So I signed everything. And then I got there and it was something like a £500,000 set up for the store. And we were contracted with these certain builders. And it was really like, it was just a situation at the time that I couldn't afford. But I'd put like a lot of money down for the deposit, and I just lost that. And that was like the first time in my journey that I realized like, oh, I'm not actually invincible. Like Odd Muse has just been going to strength. Mm. And I've said yes to everything. This is the one thing that I was like, oh, I actually need to like start approaching things with a little less speed and a bit more thought. Mm. And I mean, through that mistake, like I've been able to create a big opportunity for the brand out there. So mm-hmm. we like really focused on online after that, because I was like, we've got to recoup in that region.
Yeah.
It's that one of those, that a mistake like that has taught me a lot.
And
it's nice to be humbled.
I think so. It is nice to be humbled, you know, and I think it teaches us, you know, we do actually become the people we're meant to be through those experiences.
Yeah.
Because like you say, I think if it is all we can go through it thinking like, this is a breeze. Like, I don't know what people are complaining about, you know, but then actually, and I think it is good to talk about, because I think even like people will see things like you making sales like so quickly and then expecting that it happens for everyone, but it really yeah. isn't the case.
And I think with Odd Muse, a lot of people see it as an overnight success because Lorna picked us up and it yeah. was all very quick. But what they didn't know is I was planning that brand since I was like 19.
Yeah.
So like a solid 2.5 years. So I feel like I went to market with like a very clear mission, a very good product, mm-hmm. and I wasn't trying to like figure it out along the way. Like I really feel like I launched Odd Muse as its best version at that time.
Yeah. How did you come up with the name Odd Muse?
Oh, I keep telling myself to polish this, but I really wanted the word muse because a muse is essentially something that is super inspirational. However, I was coming to market to try and convince younger women to stop over-consuming fast fashion. I just wanted a word that represented I was doing something differently in the industry. So I landed on Odd Muse.
I love it. Well, I love it.
Yeah, a lot of people love the name.
I do. Would you say manifestation helped your journey at all?
Oh, 100%. 100%. You've got to be your biggest fan. You've got to believe in yourself. Like my mum begged me not to quit my job. Mm. She was like, we were launching in September. She was like, just stay at your job till Christmas and then like revisit in January. And I was like, no, I know I have to go all or nothing on this. Mm. And I think it's going to work.
Yeah.
I feel like I was actually, when I think back to myself now, I really am trying to like channel back into that like 22-year-old girl
yeah.
who was just like, she was just obsessed with her idea, and she was so, wasn't necessarily so confident in herself, but she was so confident in her work.
Yeah.
And I really try and like, I look back to who I was when I was like 22 years old, and I'm like, I need to get back to her, because she was just like She was so tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And she didn't care what other people were saying at all.
I think sometimes, like when we come out of uni or we come out of school, we do have this like, a lot of us can have this kind of like incredible ignorance that kind of a naivety that actually gives us so much confidence in ourselves.
I just remember like laying awake every single night. I couldn't sleep at the idea of launching Odd Muse. Like I thought it was like the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that credits to obviously manifesting and feeling good about going into something.
You say you want to like go back to channeling it. And I think that a conversation that I think is really important to have is that while we can like thrive in our careers and have all these dreams come true, there is sometimes a personal sacrifice that we have to make in our mental health.
Yeah.
And you said you don't mind me sharing.
No, not at all.
What happened on Friday. Do you want to tell the story?
So Roxy actually came to Bond Street to film my podcast. And she actually sat down with me and you said, "Are you okay?" And I just burst into tears. I was not ready. I hadn't slept. I'd had 11 meetings back to back. And I mean, first of all, like, thank you so much. I just, kindness goes a long way for me because I just don't feel that there's enough of it in the world. And like, we sat down for a little while and I was like, how do I need to be prioritizing myself? Like, I've created this expectation with people in my life and people in my team where I can have 11 meetings in my diary. I can have all these things and I'm supposed to show up at 6 a.m. the next day to do a whole day of filming. And something as simple as you saying like, well, I don't think you should film more than 3 podcasts a day. I just remember sending my assistant the longest email, like, I can't do more than 4 meetings a day. I can't do this. Like, I can't pivot all the time. And so I just feel like I started Odd Muse being across everything and I'm kind of like grown like that. And I'm just like crashing and burning all the time. So yeah, I have kind of like struggled prioritizing myself in the process and actually realizing like even something as simple today, sitting down and actually having someone do my hair and makeup and sitting there for 2 hours and just getting myself ready for the day when I have all this filming to do, it just makes such a difference. Yeah. And I feel like I just don't kind of like respect my needs around the business as well. So yeah.
Yeah.
But if there's anyone to crash and burn in front of, it's from Roxy over here. I was like, yes, at least it wasn't like someone else.
Honestly, I really like, I could just see the overwhelm in that moment because I've been there before.
I mean, I do like, I even with like mental health, like I struggle speaking on that because I feel like it's become such a buzzword, like anxiety and stuff. But like, I'm constantly like coming up in hives whenever I have to do, like I'm such... My producer said it to me as well. She said to me, like, people don't realise how introverted you are. And that's so true. Like, I'm such an introverted person, but I'm also a businesswoman and I know that I need to go and do these things and put myself out there in order to grow my business.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm putting myself in uncomfortable positions pretty much every week of my life.
Yes.
But it's a sacrifice and it's what you've got to do.
I can completely relate to that and I definitely had that for years, wanting to share the message of manifestation, but absolutely hating being on camera.
Yeah.
And knowing that discomfort, but it can affect your mental health. And I don't think it's a buzzword. I think that it is a very real and honest conversation to have. What do you think, would you say are some of the sacrifices you've had to make to get to this point in your business?
I mean, mainly my time. A lot of like just being in my young 20s was like building Odd Muse, not being present. So that I had like a few years back, I was like, I don't know what my interests are outside of Odd Muse. And when I'm talking to someone, I'm kind of like really blankly not interested. I'm just thinking about work. Mm-hmm. And that affects me because the normal me that I know is like so interested in conversating with other people and finding out about what they're doing and stuff like that. So I really kind of recognized that I just was kind of like this shell of myself and I wasn't myself for a long time. And I feel like I'm trying to get back to that. But I mean, you essentially sacrifice everything for a business, like your time, just your mental health, your evenings, everything, just like what you enjoy, your interests. Like I've had to like really explore like what I actually like outside work, which is so strange, but you really kind of like lose yourself a little bit.
Yeah. How's your relationship been throughout the process?
I mean, really amazing, to be totally honest. I've been really lucky. I'm very, very lucky with the people I have around me, and that That's goes amazing. Beyond just my partner, mm-hmm. like my friends. I don't have too many friends, but I have two like solid friends that we've been best friends for years. Mm. I have a really great supporting family that just love Odd Muse, and I really like sharing Odd Muse with the people around me.
Yeah.
And I think that's what keeps me going. So a lot of my first few years, like a lot of what I did with my success was to pay my parents' mortgage off, buy my parents a car, make sure me and my boyfriend can do like the most fun things and experience life in our 20s. Yeah. So if I didn't do that, I feel like I would literally like crack, like I wouldn't be able to. But every like Christmas and every summer, I'm able to really just remind myself why I do it. And I think success is nothing if you can't share it.
Oh,
and I'm really lucky that I get to share it.
That is so beautiful. I really love that. And it is absolutely true. You know, you always have to ask yourself, like, what's it all for?
Yeah.
What is this like time and energy and sacrifice that I'm making for? And you need to know that. And for each person, it will be different.
Yeah.
And you found like it's for me to be able to like share it with the people that I love and create like experiences
together. It's like my biggest pleasure in life, like doing nice things for like my family, because I recognize I didn't come from like a rich family. I just a very normal family.
Mm.
But like I think love is a currency, and I was just so blessed with just the most amazing amount of love, and still to this day, I always say to my brothers and sisters, because you know, like when you get older and you like distance a little bit, I always am constantly saying to my brother and sister, like, I hope that like, we're like close forever. Like, I hope we text every day forever.
I think you only get closer as you get older.
Yeah.
If you're already
I definitely experienced
now.
That with my sister. We used to hate each other. But we're definitely nicer to each other.
That's
when we're
sweet.
Pitching 30. But I'm very lucky.
So I think that perhaps, correct me if I'm wrong, but like you've just come back from New York, and I wonder if this has contributed to this like current feeling of overwhelm, because that in itself seemed like a mad journey.
Yeah.
And obviously you went to open a huge store in New York, which I can only imagine is such a major financial investment.
Yep.
And the day after the tariffs came in, can you explain what happened?
Yeah. So I basically moved to New York in April of this year, but decided like 8 weeks that I was going to go, because I'd done February Fashion Week. I had an amazing meeting with Nordstrom's and other partners. And I was like, I need to be here. Like, I need to, we were building out a team in the store. We'd signed permanent. And I was really kind of relying on getting some good relationships and some good US growth. So I moved my whole life. And then Trump brought in like 145%. Tariff on all imports, which basically means if someone from the US was to buy a $100 dress, they're probably going to be charged $250 on arrival. It's not feasible. The whole US side of my business completely plateaued overnight, which is around 40% of my business. And I mean, that happened to me when Brexit happened years ago, but I had like just me on the team. When you have 60 people on your team and a couple leases, it's really stressful.
I mean, that is so stressful.
Yeah. Because like,
how much
sudden,
was your lease in New York?
It's a lot of money. That caused a lot of stress. And I feel like even when we was doing this whole thing with Nordstrom's, they completely pulled out, because there was like everyone industry-wide has anxiety right now. We're not taking on any new brands. So everything I'd moved them for had halted. And it was also this time where I just didn't know what I was doing. I was like holding shipments, then giving them the green light, then stopping them. Then we had no stock. And I was just frantic because I didn't know what to do. And then I'm talking to people high up in Nordstrom's and they're like, we don't know what we're doing either. Like, no one knows. 2025 was just another humbling year. But again, it taught me that we're not invincible. We are established to the point where we are susceptible to what's going on in UK economy, US economy. And it really, like we said, puts those problems that were breaking my heart 2 years ago into perspective. This last year was, I look back, it was super stressful, but I'm going into this year like, I am so resilient to be carrying on, because I'm sure anyone in my mind would have just like taken a few offers and like sold the business, because I definitely had some moments over the last quarter of last year where I was like, I don't think I can do this anymore. Like, I think this is bigger than me. And it maybe needs like someone a lot more business savvy at a less the sensitive level it is now. But no, I've gone into 2026. I'm still here. I'm still independent.
Honestly,
and I'm not. Yeah.
Oh, I could give you like a round of applause. And I actually feel really, really emotional for you. Like,
yeah, it's a lot.
It is a lot. Like, you're still so young and you're so smart, clearly. But like, for anyone, to have that level of stress at such, like, for any age, to be honest, to know that you have these overheads, which are like crazy, for 40% of your business to kind of basically, like you say, plateau overnight for something that's so out of your control.
I
can't imagine physically how your body handled that, mentally how you worked through that. And also, on top of all that, and I remember what my question was now, is I imagine there's an added pressure of the fact that you've become this kind of poster girl for this, what people think of as like this overnight success, or you're the poster girl of how UGC and founder-led brands can succeed in this way. Because actually, when you started on Muse, it was there weren't many founder-led brands like this where you'd really shared your story of it, and that had helped like contribute to the success. And I think lots of other brands have now kind of replicated what you've done. So that must come with its own pressures, because is there a kind of like, and I don't think there should be, so this is not a question of is there, but is there a kind of added like, oh gosh, I don't want to say that it's not worked out because fuck, like do you know what I mean? Like, how do you cope with that pressure?
Yes and no, because I feel like now my audience is a level where, at a size, sorry, where things can get misconstrued and people can run with like little clips. But I don't know, I feel like I've got this far being quite an open book, so I have no shame in being like, 2025 we didn't grow, like we just stayed the same, but like I opened a store and I like I survived, and I'm very fine saying like I done so well to like survive that year.
I love that.
In business and mentally, and it's like, I think there was something that went out the other day about Tala with their 2.5 million pound loss, but like they planned for that, and then you've got the whole internet speaking on it and thinking that they must not be doing well and stuff like that. So it is hard knowing that there's those angles that people can take, and I've definitely experienced that myself. But I think I will continue just still being an open book.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is so inspirational and so, so much more valuable for anybody that follows you to be able to say like, yes, there are really great moments and it's really successful, but there are also moments that aren't so good, because that is the reality of business.
Yeah.
And I think it's so damaging when people sort of don't see that. And I think it's really interesting with the Tala thing, because I saw this clip on it where they'd kind of shown that like the same publication on one day was like, you know, this brand worth 70 million, and the next day it was like 2.5 million loss. And I think there is this kind of takedown of successful young women.
Oh, 100%. Even in the comments on that post, they're like, do a deep dive on Muse, do a deep dive on Muse. And I'm like, there are a lot of people out there now that, even though it's a small percentage, it's not, I've really struggled with last year, that there is now a percentage of people that don't want to see me do well, because I feel like, going back to like my family and my friends and my partner, I feel like I've lived in this bubble of lovely people, and I had like this naivety that negativity online and all people saying things don't exist. And then I feel like when you hit, it's just statistically, you're going to hit an audience as you grow. So I've really struggled with that, more so than I think is like normal. Like I really struggle with like that even existing and people not wanting to see Odd Muse do well because me.
It's honestly really horrible. Odd. What are your kind of experiences with it? When did you notice it kind of starting?
I basically moved to America and started hitting the American For You page. They're quite passionate out there.
Oh really?
Yeah, I had someone like just basically not look into the brand and just do this massive piece on how they think Odd Muse is like a load of rubbish, and there's it's got we've built success in like non-ethical ways and stuff like that. And I maybe dealt with that a bit wrong, because I've responded and stuff like that, and I know not to do that again. And I always
why not? Because I can imagine like it must be so hard not to respond. You want to defend yourself.
It's really
right?
hard, because what happened? It's not just like commenting on, I don't know, not liking my outfit one day or something like that. It's actually commenting on like who I am as a person when you're saying that, I don't know, my factories aren't running ethical. I only have one factory. It's a family run. And I'm so open about it. There's YouTube vlogs on it. But anyone who's going to say that stuff on a platform like TikTok, it is going to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went on a bit of a rampage defending myself. But I know not to do that now. And I don't really have any regrets on that, because I don't think anyone should know what to do when like 500 people are like DMing them horrible things and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was like my first experience. And
why would you not respond now? What was the lesson?
Just because I think with certain platforms, they're going to want to believe what they want to believe. I just need to make sure that when it comes to like factories and how we're running our business, none of that can be explained in a 30-second TikTok. Mm. So if you want to know about that, you can go to my YouTube content, you can read my Substack, you can follow along, because it's not a 30-second piece. It's a longevity piece. It's the way I run my business every single day. So I think I know that I have an audience that know the truth.
Yeah.
And you just have to be comfortable with that, because I'm certainly not gatekeeping anything. I've been an open book for years.
Yeah.
So when people try and make content that is derogatory, I'm like, you can literally come to my page and find everything. Like, there's no stone left unturned with my content. I've literally videoed me working in my factories. I've showed everything. So I just have to get comfortable with, some people want to believe what they want to believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is kind of like, it's a bit of a female founder thing. Like, everyone's going to get to a point where they're too successful, and TikTok, UK press, they're going to want to run something. Mm. So it's just my first experience.
How do you feel like you are more able to kind of like see that stuff and like not take it so personally, or is that still a journey?
I'm so sensitive. So it's just best for me not to, like, I've just distanced myself from TikTok and my life is just so much better.
What about things like Instagram, or is it not so bad on there?
No, I find Instagram like fine. Like, I don't spend a lot of time on there. I'm really loving Substack this year. And I
talk to me about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm wondering if I should start a Substack.
You absolutely should. So Substack is basically kind of like a new, well, it's not new. It's really big in the US, but I feel like it's coming over to the UK. It's basically a social media platform for long form content. And it's kind of like, I love the idea of things coming back around, and it feels like long form blog content is coming back.
Right.
So instead of like posting TikToks of me being really upset and not understanding what's going on this week, I write one weekly newsletter of like what happened in my week. And
It's also like quite cathartic, I imagine. It's like a journaling practice. So good. Like,
it made me realize how much I love long form writing. And it's, you know, I feel like it's got the same kind of edge as reading a book. Like, it's just different to TikTok. It's way less like longer form, more attention.
Team, let's start a Substack.
Yeah, you absolutely can.
Like, I mean, I love writing, obviously.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about confidence.
Mm.
How do you think your confidence has grown, and how do you think, in which parts are you still on a journey?
So I think with my confidence, I have always been like super shy, super introverted, but super passionate about Odd Muse. So I've always found a lot of confidence in my work.
Mm-hmm.
But through putting myself online and now doing like much more of a personal brand focus, I am really challenging myself to find like confidence in myself, which I haven't really had before. Mm-hmm. So like even something like this today, like I will have like a rash this whole time and I get really nervous. So I'm trying to work on that. But again, it is practice makes perfect, putting yourself in uncomfortable positions and just not consuming things that don't make you feel good.
Mm. I think people would honestly, there'll be so many people who will be so surprised to hear that you're nervous, because, you know, you've built so much success, you're online so much. And I think it's really good to share, because I think
starting a business makes you a bit socially awkward.
Like, do you think?
100%, or at least my experience.
Yeah.
Like, I have worked so independently for so long. It's only when I'm on shoots or have like office days that I'm able to have like a really good like interaction with multiple people and like store openings and stuff. But that's really not 50% of my time at all. Starting a business has made me a bit socially awkward. And just coming back from New York, like, I really thought I was going to be like going to events, doing all this. But in reality, like, I'm trying to battle US growth and tariffs and stuff. So a lot of the time was just spent in my apartment doing damage control. And then when I'd have to go to events, I'd be like, I literally don't know what to say. And I feel like I'm a bit kind of like rebuilding again from that year. So yeah, I'd say having a business and like your worst year in business does kind of make you a bit socially awkward.
Yeah.
That's how I feel at least.
I suppose, especially because you were so young when you started. So those are the years that most people are just like going out, partying, doing all of that. And for you, all your time was spent on Muse.
Oh yeah. Like I'm any situation where I'm going into like filming or talks or anything, like it's always fine, but I will like not sleep the night before. I really anticipate it. I've got like, I feel like sometimes I've got like no control over my mind. So I'm really on a journey with that. But at the same time, I have such a demanding business. So sometimes I feel like I get to the end of the year and I've not done much personal growth, which is always frustrating.
Is there anything that you do daily to kind of like help support you and how you feel?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Amy.
No.
Right, we need to.
I know.
We need to get
it's
you
really
doing
bad.
Some things
like,
for yourself.
Sometimes I don't even allow time in my diary to like have a lunch break. Like it's just insane. But I feel like my business has grown through that sacrifice. So I think that's why I'm like, I'm a bit attached to it. But at the same time, like, my partner will say it to me, being completely out of the business and not really knowing what's going on. He'll be like, you've hired all these people. Why are you still working like this? But it's because I'm just so passionate about it. But now, like, even what happened the other day, I'm glad that happened. I'm glad it happened in January, because if it was in December, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to sort my life out next year. But I literally come out of that conversation like, no, we're not having another year like this. Like, we're absolutely not. And I think I saw myself moving to New York last year, like really taking that step. But the reality was I was just online with my UK team the whole time in my apartment. And I think there's something about reaching 30 as well.
Definitely.
Where I'm like, I can't live my life like this anymore. Like, I feel like I'm still like this 22-year-old girl that's launching a business. And I just need to grow more personally. And I think 2026 is my year for that. And I think 2025 taught me that I have no control over what whoever Trump's going to do or who's going to do what. So I might as well just look after myself.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure, you know, it's understandable. You've built the business this far with all the hours, with giving 100% of yourself, that there will be this underlying fear of, if I don't do that, is everything going to fall apart? And it's really being able to trust that it absolutely won't.
But then seeing like everything be upside down last year and we survived, I'm kind of like, it's fine. And
of course,
again, I'm comfortable not growing the business. If I was having a chat earlier and I said, like, if this is the ceiling, I'm good. Like, I can live my life the rest of my time with Odd Muse. Like, we did 20 million last year.
What is incredible.
But what is wrong with doing 20 million this year? I don't care for like to continue to be this brand that's like 200% on the year and like all this crazy growth, because I've had to sacrifice so much and I've realized like it's expensive.
It is. And you know what? Like, I really do think there is this kind of like, I don't know, I do think it can be like this toxic online thing about like, you've got to hit this number, you've got to increase this much, every year has to be better than the last. And I couldn't agree more with you of, and I'm so happy to hear that you've got that mindset of like, actually doing the same as last year is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, what is the more? If you are able to like, you know, you're employing all these people and giving them like work and like financial security, you're giving yourself and your family all these incredible experiences, you're living life the way that you want, that is success. Like, beyond most people's wildest dreams. And so why break ourselves in the pursuit of like more?
I know.
For what?
Yeah. And that's kind of, I kind of got like addicted to that, big launches, to all this growth. And then I was just like, well, I'm not growing in myself. And I'm like, nearly 30 and I still feel like a child.
Yeah. This is the like, year of you.
Yeah.
It's your Saturn return
that way.
As well.
Yes. That's exactly how I feel. And like, even just like separating myself as Amy and not Odd Muse is something that I'm really passionate about. So I feel like this year is like my year. We started a bit rocky though.
You said you've had a few offers. Like, have you ever thought about selling? Like, what is the pro for someone that doesn't know? Like, you know, you see online like so-and-so sold.
Yeah.
What is that kind of process? And is it something you've had to think about?
I mean, I always say like, don't sell if you don't need to. So we're like super comfortable.
And you've still not had any outside investment?
No.
Unbelievable.
No. listen, there might be a time in my life where I like want that cash injection and I'm not as passionate about it anymore. So if you would have asked me even 2 years ago, I would have been like, no, never selling it. Mm-hmm. But now I think my FD always says to me, like, never say never. Mm-hmm. And now I'm definitely like, I feel like maybe one day I would, or some sort of portion. I definitely feel like I want to start something that I'm not so attached to, just to sell it. Yeah. Because I want to know that I can do that. I just don't think I could fully sell Odd Muse.
Yeah.
It's just such a passion project. I love everyone that works there. I know like a lot of things change when you sell to investors. Yeah. It would have to be the literal perfect person. Mm. And a lot of investors come in from, like, when I'm saying, oh, this is the ceiling, I don't want to grow it anymore, like the an investment point of view is no. They want to get costs down and get profits up. And that's not the kind of business I've created.
No.
So, yeah. But we've had some great offers. Yeah.
Okay, you can tell me about those afterwards. Amy, I think honestly, you are so inspiring. Like, I really think you're amazing.
Thank you.
And I think what you've done is so incredible. And I really, truly hope that this year you do spend more time working on yourself because you've proved enough how much you can do and it will always be your business and your baby.
Yeah.
But I hope that you're able to let go of the reins a little bit just so you can start calming your nervous system, having some time for yourself.
I also think people have different eras, and I've been doing Odd Muse for 5 years and it's fine. Like, it's even with your different books, having different eras, like, that's where I'm here. I've had it for 5 years and I feel like 5 years is a real pivotal moment. Like, you don't just want to do the same thing for the next 5 years. So,
maybe this is your you era.
Yeah.
Amy, is there any advice you would like to share with someone who is thinking about starting their own brand?
My biggest bit of advice is to just start. You can make it better later. Like, when I think back to the first draft of Odd Muse, like, it was still very well thought out, but I spent the last 5 years making it better. So I think a lot of people put a lot of pressure on themselves to start with the most well-rounded, perfect execution. And the hardest thing is actually to just start. So I always say to people, just start.
And what if somebody does start and sales are slow and they're like, oh God, is there any sort of like practical advice you could give to help them with their sales?
Oh, your worst day in sales is your best lesson. Like, you just don't do that again. I just think, I think mistakes are, and this is one of the things that I kind of like hate about the internet, because before I really started having a following, I used to make loads of mistakes and I loved to make mistakes and I learned from them. But now you're held to some, like, a perfection that doesn't exist. So I think mistakes are your best lessons, and welcome them and don't take them personally. So even from a product point of view, I launched with a 6-piece collection, only the blazer sold. I wasn't offended that 5 other things didn't work. I didn't take that personal. I ran with the blazer and what she liked about it. Learning what your customer doesn't like and making mistakes is how you get the best brand and the best community. So I love bad days at work.
I love that. Okay, I've got a quick fire question round for you. One thing you wish you'd hired for earlier?
Oh, I wish I got an assistant earlier. I didn't get myself an assistant until like 3 years in.
You're right.
Which is crazy.
I feel like that's one of the first hires to make.
Yeah, so I wish I got an assistant sooner.
A mistake you'd never repeat?
Probably signing a lease with no P&L.
A risk that did pay off?
Probably our first ever pop-up. Spent every single penny in my bank account on
that. Did you?
Yeah.
Which one? The Covent Garden?
The first ever one, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Just tell me a bit more about it. So you spent everything?
I spent everything on it because I just felt like we was only releasing like 10 products a year. So I felt like I constantly had to be doing things marketing wise. And I just recognized that everyone was building e-commerce brands, but no one was like kind of post-COVID respecting that kind of in-person relationship. So I did a pop-up shop and it was just absolutely huge. And then that's led to why we've opened New York, why we've done Bond Street, because I first tested that in-store demand.
Incredible. I love the like mindset you have to take risks. Yeah. Just like, I'm going to go for it. One metric that you think founders obsess over a bit too much?
Gross revenue.
A belief you had at 21 that you've completely outgrown?
Probably about sacrifice. Like, I remember looking at the first podcast that I ever went on, and I'm like, there's too much soft content for female founders. We just need to be working all the time. Like, there's no time for face masks. No. I was really aggressive about it. Like, it takes sacrifice. Like, there's too much you content. Yeah. And now I'm like completely the other way. Like, I need some time for myself.
Give me the you content.
Yeah. So probably that.
What does success actually look like for you now?
I think kind of what I touched on earlier, just success is nothing if you can't share it. And that's what's really kept me going, even when it's felt too much.
Yeah. And my final question is, what does rising mean to you?
Ooh, just elevating into the best version of yourself. Not your business, yourself.
Love that. Thank you so much, Amy, for being such an incredible guest.
Thank you.
Wow, I absolutely loved that episode. I am such a fan of Amy's. Like, I really am. And I feel like, I don't know, she's just so inspiring. What she's achieved is incredible. I really appreciate her honesty, her vulnerability, how open she is on sharing the other side. And I also just really, like, my heart just really goes out to her. I can see, you know, as she shared, she was definitely really overwhelmed when I saw her on Friday. And I just wanted to give her, like, the most gigantic hug. And, you know, just said, and I just, yeah, I just, I don't know. I just felt for her. And I really hope she finds this year the kind of personal growth that she deserves to experience, you know, and I hope she puts herself first more. But yeah, I think she's also paved the way for lots of young founders and said, you know, here's what can be done, which I just always love. So I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, you know what to do, team. Please share, subscribe, comment. It all really helps the show and allows us to continue and make it bigger and better every season. I'll see you for my solo episodes every Thursday and back here on Monday for another amazing episode of Rise with Roxy. Bye. A Rayo Original Podcast.